You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by footballstadiumprince.com. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case Elder scenario for here City right more. Here.
And it's stopped!
Yes!
And it's stopped!
Totally
Matt
redeems
Elder.
Himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself! Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. Then it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
And another goal!
And it is now 2-0 Minneapolis
City. Oh, yes!
City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
This is the People's Pitch Podcast, the official podcast of your Minneapolis City SC. I am Nate, as usual, joined by John Bizworm. And we've tossed together a really pretty nice grab bag of a show for you today. It is time for the guys to do what they do best and just run their mouths about soccer, because we've got a pretty loose framework today, don't we, John?
We're doing it live, man. We're doing it live, everybody. So today we're just gonna get right after it. We got a member meeting recap. If you're a member, then you know what's up. If you're not a member, now you're gonna know what's up. we got some thoughts from Nate and myself on the new installment of EA Sports FIFA 23, which we are 1 month late on, and we'll be talking World Cup today, baby. So it's
right.
Members and FIFA all day, all night. So
right.
let's get going here.
Well, mark your calendars now. We're going to talk about the World Cup. And while we're doing that, we want to remind you that Minneapolis City is partnering with Utapils Brewing to throw watch parties for all the USA games. Hopefully there's going to be more than three. So you can join us on Monday, November 21st for the USA versus Wales game. That's at 1 p.m., right? Then there's Black Friday's game, 11:25 USA versus England. And finally, the Monday afterwards, 11:28 USA versus Iran. It's going to be a good time. You got $5 beers. You're going to get free pizza from Blaze Pizza for the first 50 people. Of course, Utapils always has tons of free parking, and there is a lot of space in the tap room, so you can actually get a spot, get comfy, watch the game, log into the Wi-Fi, pretend you're at work, whatever. We're going to have City merch. There's going to be the football, some items from the Football Town and Minneapolis City collection that will be available
Ooh.
At the first and the third game. And John, I just, you know, one of my first experiences watching soccer with you was the watch parties that Stegman's threw at the local back in way back in 2014. And they were a blast. So you know that these are going to be amazing times as well.
That was back when we were soccer poor, Nate, but now we're soccer rich.
Now we are soccer. We have so much soccer, almost too much soccer.
Yep. So let's go. Let's talk member meeting.
Yeah, man. So last night, I jumped on the call, and one of the things that the club wants to start doing is providing more frequent updates, even if they're just, you know, for a half hour here, half hour there, just to get some and answer any questions people have, give a brief update as far as where we are with things like the futures and kits and do we have a coach and things like that. So last night we jumped on, and Dan had just a few things, but really just wanted to introduce the format. And there were about 20 of us on the call, right? And we went through just a few minor things, I would say. One of the things that Dan definitely wanted to make sure that we were all aware of and promoting and talking about and trying to attend was, of course, the watch parties at Utapils. They're going to be a big deal, and it's a big part of our sponsorship to make sure we're supporting our sponsors. Mm-hmm. And we do that by going to Utapils and drinking beer until we can't anymore. So we should
yeah.
do that.
Stop it. Awful, Dan. Stop and drink beer. God.
Seems like an easy task, right?
Yeah.
But then there were some other discussions, a lot of good questions from the members. Not much to report on Dan's side. It was really when the members started asking questions that we got some good information out of them. That Football Town partnership is an interesting one, and it sounds like it sounds like we're going to have a number of cool merch drops throughout the season, thanks to them. And that merch is already looking awesome. If you're a member and you haven't checked that out, mm-hmm. I strongly urge you to get on and pre-order it, because that stuff is going to sell out quickly once it hits mm-hmm. the general
super,
public.
Super awesome quality too. Yeah. It's not your typical mass run t-shirts. It's like really nice embroidery. It's the stuff you can wear out on the town, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And otherwise we talked about, and that kind of led us into kits. Like what's happening? Are we getting new kits this year? Dan said that we typically like to be on kind of an every other year cadence, because it's expensive to buy a bunch of shorts and shirts and get them mm-hmm. custom printed for all of our players. But part of this, part of staying fresh and helping the budget out is maybe alternating every other year. So we might be looking at some new away kits this year, while our home kits stay the same, but no decisions made on that yet. One of the big points of discussion was sponsorships. And I think that it is one of the ways that Minneapolis City is perhaps behind some of the other clubs in the USL2. Money is extremely local. It's very grassroots. You know, it was Adam Pribble in the past getting out, shaking hands, trying to get some friends of the club to pony up and get some attention for their business. Nate Pence, thankfully, and Pence Homes has stepped up. Uda Pills has stepped up. Twin City Orthopedic, always friendly to us. We've been able to grab some other sponsors last year, but I think the sponsorship game is one that we have to improve on definitively over the next over the next few months. And so Dan talked through some plans for that, but also opened it up and said, if anyone has any ideas, if anyone has any connections, feel free to contact the club and you can refer, you know, sponsors, and that would be a great, great help.
And I wasn't able to attend, but I assume he passed the collection plate at that point.
It's like it's church.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Give anything you can, folks. It goes to a good cause.
And the last thing we talked about was, it's kind of an interesting question. Is like, the futures are starting. It'd be great. But is there any organized opportunities for Minneapolis City to play in the winter months, you know, to kind of keep the name, keep the brand recognition out there, keep the name going? Somebody suggested perhaps joining the same or a comparable futsal league like that Joy Athletic is in, because Joy over the winter months plays in an indoor futsal league. They're fairly mm-hmm. decent at futsal, which is good for them. And they, you know, they travel all the way to like Grand Rapids, Michigan and things like that. Basically, Dan said,
nope.
Travel in that sort of a league, unless something regional pops up, like incredibly local, you know, travel to that extent over the course of the winter is very, very difficult to put in the budget.
Well, what I don't understand is you look at the other states in our region, and you look at Wisconsin, because I know it, and you look at the fall majors division. You look at, like, they used to have a winter division where they play five-a-side with boards. And it was a culmination of, like, you had an end of the year champion that won, that you know, that had the most points from fall, winter, and spring/summer, and there was activation points all year. And that, I know they have it in Chicago, I know they have it in Michigan. We don't have it here, and we don't even have our MAS divisions playing in the fall. It's like the only one that I know of that's 11 aside is like a, I'm not going to say a shitty you know, local league, but there's it's an 11 aside league of just a hodgepodge of teams that are of many different varying degrees of ability or disability, and there's no competitive aspect to it. Like, why isn't the MSA, Minnesota Soccer Association, looking at that to keep, you know, the people engaged? Because there's plenty of dome spaces, opportunity in the fall to places to play, but we just don't do it here in our state because of the weather. So it's like someone's really got to take the bull by the horn and run with that. But it's something that we constantly are looking at. But like Dan said, unless it's hyper-localized, like, it would be great to have, you know, the likes of Stegman's and you know, the Cardinals and Spam, like, doing something that is like that there's a touch point in multiple seasons.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, basically the answer was not right now, maybe in the future, but that was it. I think moving forward, you know, there's going to be a few more of these updates happening in the future. I know there's a lot of news on the horizon. Futures trial registration, I think, just opened today. So there's going to be some updates on the futures coming down the pipe. I know we've got things like scarves and stuff to vote for eventually. And of course, the big announcement that should be upcoming eventually is who is going to be the coach of the USL2 squad. So all that kind of stuff is going to be brought up and talked through fairly openly and honestly in these member meetings. So if you're a member and you get that invitation, I highly recommend that log into one or two of them. It's a pretty good time. I think Dan was a little sleepy last night, but usually he's a pretty good entertainer.
Yeah, definitely check those out. It's the platform that you are given to be part of the club in a deeper level. So please take advantage of it. I highly recommend it because there's been a lot of things that have come out of those member discussions that you and I know, and probably the majority of people who listen to this, but the folks that aren't members or that are members that don't attend those things, even if you're out of town, be part of it. Like, you can still be part of it if you don't live here. And if you do live here, why are you not being part of it? So definitely check that out. So, all right, Nate, well, let's get into the guts of our show today, where we kick off talking about FIFA. We're going to start off with the EA Sports FIFA 23. It is that time of year. We all, at least us on this show and maybe, you know, Jonah, get really excited for the next installment of EA Sports FIFA for all the gamers out there. And if it's any indicator of our level of excitement that we forgot to talk about the launch of it until almost a month after, I am safe to say that we are less jazzed about this year's version than we were in the past. But with that said, Nate, it's still a game where we salivate over it to a certain degree. We sink hours into it. We at some point all get around to purchasing it. And maybe, Nate, you know, did you play the beta or have you purchased it? Let's start there.
Yeah, I played the beta. I was actually like, it's, and we'll get into why, but it's this iteration felt so different to me in the beta that I I stopped. I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna fucking suck at FIFA this year. I just had to like put it down and I never got really back to it. And then I did end up playing it. You know, since I pre-ordered it, I played it on opening day and all this stuff. I had my squad already built. I had my ultimate team squad built and ready to go thanks to the web app. So I was ready to roll. But yeah, man, I've been playing.
All right. Well, then let's talk about the new stuff and then I'll talk about my engagement with it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting additions, and you can tell that EA, this is the last, you know, EA Sports FIFA game. If FIFA is going to have their own game, EA Sports is going to have their own game moving forward, right?
No, so you can tell it's going to be under the FIFA banner. Yep. So it won't be EA anymore.
Yeah. So you know, I think EA is probably starting to develop some more proprietary, programming and like thing options in the game that I think they're going to make. Yeah, no, I think they're going to like take this and this is the start of what EA's real soccer game is going to look like, whether it's next year or the year after. But there's a lot of changes this year on the Ultimate Team side. That's mostly where I spend my time. The career mode is awesome. It's still as it was last year, which was a huge, huge improvement that you're able to build your own team. You're able to customize your own kits. You can do it every year. So you can change your kit, you know, season after season after season. If you get bored of staring at the same color scheme and everything on the field, it's really, really cool. So career mode also lets you, you know, customize yourself as the manager or as the player, as they always have, but the manager customization is something that's new over the last couple of years. So leaps and bounds over the last couple of years in the career mode side, which you and I had lamented quite a bit. in the years prior, right? Thinking like, it's not a moneymaker. EA is spending paying no attention on it. Why would they bother? You know, they're making money hand over fist on Ultimate Team, and that's where all the improvements are coming. But
well, just wait until I go.
If you're a career mode guy, the career mode is in pretty good shape right now. But I've been playing a lot of Ultimate Team, and there are some cool updates that they have made. The first thing I noticed is like the dribbling on Ultimate Team is way more reactive. It is smoother. The game feels slower because the dribbling, they've paid such attention to getting the dribbling right and the skill moves right. I'm not much of a skiller, so it kind of sucks for me to get schooled. But that is one of the first reactions I had when I played the beta, John, is like, my God, my guys are so fucking slow. And it's really because you got to make all the improved dribbling metrics that they've thrown in. Have you played? Have you gotten it? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. I'll get to mine in a second here once you finish up talking about the new stuff.
Yeah, my second point on some updates this year that I'm really, really interested in is they've especially, I think it's maybe only on next gen consoles like PS5, but they've added this idea of like a player speed types. I can't remember what the exact word is, but
dynamic speed.
It's something like that, right? It's like, you just have a fast player anymore. Like players can still, it's more true to how really run. So there are three different categories. I think you can be explosive, you can be controlled, or you can be lengthy, right? And if you're an explosive runner, obviously you're faster, you're quicker off the line, and you can, you know, make some, you can separate from your defender a lot easier. If you're controlled, it's a little bit more in the middle. If you're lengthy, it's like you might accelerate slow, but your top speed can still be, you know, a 90 pace. It just takes you a while to get there, right? So that's pretty cool. And that makes a big difference too. It's not like everyone's just going after the paciest player. They're going after like lengthy players are really hot right now. That's the second interesting thing. Interesting thing is just the power creep. I'm gonna say it. Like after playing for a month and a half on Ultimate Team, you know, I've got guys on my team that are already 85, 86, 87, 89 rated. They're offering the cards that they're offering through squad building challenges are way more powerful than they should be this early in the game. I remember, you know, late last spring, kind of giving up on Ultimate Team because everybody was going after those like high 80s, low 90s cards and everyone had them in their squad. But now it's like, that's already the case. Like people are already, it's like super easy to get like an 88 ranked striker just in a squad building challenge that they'll throw out there every week. So there's a lot of new player items. They're always coming out with tons and tons of like special edition players, I think way more than last year. And that means that there's just like a lot of high power players out there. I think EA needs to work on balancing that. But otherwise, you know, I'm loving it. I'm enjoying it. Ultimate Team is fun. Career mode is fun. And the only regret I've got about FIFA is now I've got to figure out how to make time for God of War Ragnarok, John.
Oh man, yeah, you gotta do that.
I gotta kill some fools with an axe.
Well, as far as like my involvement, there's a couple of new things that I want to touch on, like. They leaned in pretty heavily on adding Ted Lasso and the Greyhounds.
Oh my God.
Which like they leaned, I think, too far into it. You talked about it. I still think there's too heavy of a reliance on the Ultimate Team, but that goes towards the fact that that's where they make a lot of money. Volta, the street style arcade soccer, is still a thing. They actually sunk more effort into it because I kind of futzed around in there and I was like, why? Do people actually still like play that? Like what are you doing? But I still believe that there was less of a reliance on career mode, even though you touched on that stuff. So I'll talk about that in a second. And you already mentioned the fact that it's the last one under the EA Sports FIFA banner. But I played the beta. I did not purchase yet. I did, however, go to my neighbor kid's house and I sunk quite a few hours of playing against him in it. He's 11 and super into soccer. And I think that his relatives were like, why is this old man playing video games with my brother? like, what's going on? I was like, it's research. People are understanding it. I think that this FIFA is 23 is kind of a weak swan song to the series under its current name. At least with like, it has like a welcome focus, so like a theatrical flair to it.
Yeah.
To make it seem more like a like an actual broadcast you might see on like NBC in the morning, of like the Premier League. But like the Ultimate Team has its moments. I don't really play the Ultimate Team, so I you're perfect to be my the yin to my yang on that one. So I want to talk about that. But like the action replays, the viral friendly like gameplay revisions, like the power shots make it feel more lifelike, I think, from a gameplay perspective. I think it still focuses more around like simulated soccer with more intentional defending but plenty of like drama filled actions with like the new dribbling, but the dribbling is hard to get down still. So until they kind of create like a dummy version of learning how to dribble for folks like us, I think it still kind of outkicks our coverage a little bit for guys like us. But it's fun, but it stands out to me. I still think passing sucks. They have to fix passing because it's a big part of soccer. But I think their massive approach to modes their massive approach to not sinking too much into or sinking way too much into like the non-money makers. Like, why the hell is Volta still a thing? Like, create a different game that people have to buy and don't like muddy up my menu and my server space with Volta crap. Like, I don't need that.
Where does the feedback come from? I don't know. Maybe there's a ultra loyal Volta crew out there.
There might be. It might be in Europe, in South America, to be honest with you, where more street soccer is a thing. I don't know. But Volta, fuck off. I don't really care about you. Damn. Career mode, I think the stuff that you mentioned about like changing jerseys and being a player and a coach, like all that stuff's cool. But they like the gameplay advancements aren't on the career mode, really. It's all an Ultimate Team. And I'm a career mode first guy. I don't like it. I that's why I think it's a fall down. So it's, I think it's all too similar from its predecessors with, you know, it mirrors previous years. Ultimate Team still the focus, with the continue to make it really fun in there. If that's your sort of thing, but it's not my thing. So my verdict is, if you're going to buy it, which I have yet to do, buy it on Black Friday deal or wait for there to be a major price drop and then get it. I think you can have just as much fun in continuing to finish the handoff from last year to this year and then sink yourself into it when it's a little cheaper. So that's my take.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think that, you know, to your point, I'm wondering in year after year, we hope that there's going to be some major gameplay advancements that
like passing.
You love the passing. But I'm wondering, like I said, if like this is the start of them rolling out some mechanics, some gameplay mechanics that they're going to keep next year, you know, in the EA version of the game. The power shot thing is super sweet. It's so fun. Things like that, I think is just really exciting. So hopefully, you know, I think it's a good version of the game. I think it adds just enough to keep me interested for now. And I plan on switching over to full career mode by the time I get bored with Ultimate Team in March.
All right. Awesome. Well, let's put a bow on the simulated game and talk about the real game, Nate.
Yes.
The 2023 FIFA World Cup is almost upon us, just days away. So we're going to talk a little bit about our little World Cup preview and some predictions, but we're going to start off first with the news that came down earlier this week that old Greg finally picked his roster to head on that plane to Qatar. And it was not only an event that we both feel was just a waste of time and money, but also one that was not without a little controversy. There was, you know, in the announcement, some no doubters were announced, you know, like, hey, guess what, guys? Christian Pulisic is on the roster. So, like, there you go. That one. Also, some interesting picks we'll dive into in a second here. But first, Nate, tell me your thoughts on the selection show, because I know you and I talked about
Oh man. I mean, if you're going to produce some sort of a selection show, I think all the selection shows that we're used to seeing, the NFL draft, right? The NBA draft, these are like big deals and well produced. And so I tuned in thinking there might be some actual analysis. There might be something interesting coming out of it.
Nope.
But God dang, man. I mean, leave it to Soccer United Marketing to turn the roster selection into just like the next stop on the hype machine. It was
keep going.
It was just, if to me it felt just so cobbled together that it was so easy to like see it for what it was, which was just a fucking cash grab, like a shameless advertising venue for everyone from AT&T to Nike. It was brutal.
My favorite was, so it started off well, right? I was getting hyped. I'm like, yeah, it's going to be great. Like,
That's a great manifesto.
Yeah, they had, like, all this awesome stuff to kick it off with, like, you know, like, the John Hamm commercial where he plays Santa Claus. Like, I get goosebumps when I watch that. I was like, this is great. And then it got to the announcement of the first group of players, which was the goalkeepers. And a little cat out of the bag for our next part of this. Sean Johnson was noted to make the team. And then they're like, they announced the rest of the goalkeepers and they're like, and now meet your goalkeepers. And Sean Johnson walks out by himself because.
Yeah. And I was like, they're all there? No way. Oh no, they're not.
Yeah, exactly. They talk like they're all going to be there. Then he walks across the stage with a jersey and then like kind of told him what to do. So he's like standing in between Jermaine Jones and Twellman. And then Twellman's kind of telling him, like, well, no, you got to stand over here, kind of like shuffling around. And then I forget who the woman was who was kind of narrating all of it. She's trying to fill time with like talking more so this guy can go where he's supposed to go. Then he gets there. They talk to him. And then there were former players there that like no one decided to talk to that you'd probably want to get their take on things. So overall, I thought it was a big whiff. But we all know that U.S. soccer isn't the best at things. So let's start talking about what we might be able to be good at, Nate. And that's who's on the plane.
Yeah, despite all of the production and all that, there was actual news, and that is the roster came out. So let's we'll start with the goalkeeper. The goalkeepers, just like they did. I think the big news here is what you're going to get to, and that is, in our Matt Turner, of course, the number two for Arsenal. He's been pretty good for them in some of their secondary competitions. Ethan Horvath, who is the goalkeeper for Luton Town, who is doing really, really well in their league, in the lower leagues of England. And then Sean Johnson was the big surprise, the number one for New York City FC, who scored a phenomenal own goal in the first game at Allianz Field.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the big diss here is no Zach Steffen. I mean, the guy that's been our number one keeper for how long, and he doesn't even get a sniff of the plane.
Well, the reason why, first and foremost, Matt Turner, Ethan Horvath, totally get it. I don't see Sean Johnson getting on the field, maybe. Nope. You never know in the lead up. So I think Matt Turner is the number one, but the Zach Steffen not being is big because he was a Columbus Crew guy that played for Berhalter when he was the coach there. And, you know, I think with him, it really was the fact that it was probably a difficult decision for Berhalter, but I think it was the right one because if you looked at his rapid decline, it was injury. It's always been injury. He hasn't been playing. And then he sat behind Ederson at Man City for too long. And Matt Turner showed, even though he's been sitting behind Ramsdale at Arsenal, he's still getting game minutes and he's healthy. He's had a little bit of an injury, but he hasn't been injured throughout the, you know, a calendar year on and off. So I think it's the right move. I think what it does, it limits our ability to play out of the back, which I know we do, but this might be what we talked about, Nate. It might start from back to front and Berhalter might be saying like, we're going to get direct and go at people and we're not going to dink around with it in the back because I trust Matt Turner to keep the ball out of the net. I don't trust him with his feet. So maybe we're going to be doing less in the back, specifically when we start talking about defenders here in a second. Do less at the back, and then we just start getting forward and we start going at people, which is what we all want to see. So yeah. I'm happy with these, but how about the defenders?
Yeah, let's talk about defenders, and these guys can get forward. I think this was one of the things, John, as we were looking at, if you look at the defender player pool, there's a lot of exciting options at like right back, left back, and your center back positions are like, who's the third? Who's our third option? So let's start, man. Anthony Robinson in from Fulham. Tim Ream also from Fulham. Walker Zimmerman, Serginho Dest, Cameron Carter-Vickers, Aaron Long. There's a lot. I mean, it's a stacked. There's a lot of people he's rostering on the defense, because then you also add Shaq Moore, guy Joe Scally, who plays for Borussia Mönchengladbach, and then the only veteran, the only player with World Cup experience on this squad, DeAndre Yedlin.
Yeah, but, and then out you have Reggie Cannon, Mark McKenzie, Eric Palmer Brown, all names we've kind of seen in qualifying, Sam Vines, Chris Richards, Miles Robinson due to injury, and yep. John Brooks, who never was going to be in. So
it's too bad. But yeah, Vines, Richards, Robinson, all of them missed out. I mean, Miles Robinson probably would have been our number two center back if he didn't hurt himself.
Yeah. And John Brooks, I think his inclusion should have been there, but for some reason, Greg Berhalter doesn't like him, and he doesn't like Greg Berhalter, so probably good there. But mm-hmm. if you're talking about who's in, I'm going to focus in on the center back pairing. So Walker Zimmerman is the younger version of this one player that I'm gonna talk about, and I can't believe I'm saying this, and that's Tim Ream.
No.
I 3 years ago, if you would have told me that Tim Ream was going to go to the World Cup, I would have been like, you are insane. That guy is just, he's a bag of meat, man. He's going to be 35 going into the World Cup. Yep. Like, what are you thinking? And then the old man had a reawakening at Fulham the last 2 years. He's the club captain at Fulham right now. He already has a familiarity with Robinson, which is a good thing.
Yep.
He has not featured in qualifying, but the way this guy's been playing, like he's what we hope Walker Zimmerman moves into in his 30s and doesn't have the dip in form. So pairing those two guys together, I kind of like it. Having a little bit more stability at the back with a veteran that's kind of been around the block, not in the World Cup, but been around the block in the Premiership, playing great soccer right now. Like, I like it. And I read something today that after Fulham and Man City played, Pep Guardiola went up to Tim Ream and said, if you were 26, you'd be starting for me. And that was his compliment. Wow. Saying like you're legit. And like, I would buy you if you were 26. And you know what Tim Ream said? He said, if you were 26 and not 34. And you know what Tim Ream said? He's like, oh, thanks. I appreciate that. I'm actually 35.
I mean, I'm with you, man. I was not a Tim Ream guy. And I mean, you talk about qualifying 4 years ago, you talk about everything, you know, all the games in between our failed qualifying run and this World Cup. Every time Tim Ream's out there, I'm just like, why?
But now he's playing good soccer. So hopefully he can translate it to the international game, because it's been not great in the past. But, you know, good luck, man. All right, let's talk about midfield.
Yeah, man. I mean, this is the one where it's like you had some nailed on players. This is where you start to get to the obvious picks of Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams. I love the Yunus Musah pick here.
Yeah.
Brendan Aaronson is so energetic, I guess is the best way to describe him. And then you've got some really solid backups. Kellen Acosta, Luca De La Torre made it, which is great to see.
That's your guy.
That's my guy. And then Christian Roldan, another, you know, it's nice to see a homegrown player. Out as Malik Tillman. I'm not really excited about Malik Tillman as a World Cup player this time around anyway. So I'm not feeling too bad about that.
Yeah. So Malik Tillman, I'll start there. He's super young, but he chose us over Germany in an effort to make the World Cup and then didn't make it. So sorry, pal. but he's just not ready yet. I think his dip in form in the beginning of the calendar year with Rangers, I think, and getting kind of buried on the bench as a result of it, I think hurt him, but he's one to think about in the future. Mm-hmm. I think what you see here is a tale of two things. One, Brendan Aaronson's not listed as a striker. or as an attacker.
Which is kind of interesting, but he's probably better as a number 10.
I disagree. I think he's in my opinion, better as an outside player that kind of drifts inside, and but not like your all out number 10, because I don't see the scoring prowess coming out of him as a number 10.
Okay.
However, what I think this is again telling me is potentially we're going to try to get the ball forward as much as possible, anchor in front of that back line with Tyler Adams, who I think is the most important player on our roster, who can link up play, who can do all that stuff. But I think he's going to sit in front of the back line to help Tim Ream and Walker Zimmerman not get overrun. And then Yunus Musa is going to have the freedom to kind of connect the two. And then your front four are going to be all out attack, all out high pressure.
Yeah.
With having Aronson being in the middle and the energy he has. I think we're starting to see the makeup of a playing style I really, really want to see. But we'll leave it up to Berhalter to fuck that one up and play some weird style. But at the end of the day, like, now we're starting to talk about some stuff that I'm getting excited for, that could potentially go back to what we had in 2002 and almost making the World Cup semifinal. Is lots of young energy, lots of guys who don't care. They just want to ball out and pressuring opponents and not being the one constantly on our heels playing with the ball in our box.
Yeah. And I think once you get into the attack, you're going to see there's guys that might have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, especially the obvious pick, Captain Christian Pulisic, who has been struggling for playtime at Chelsea for a long time. It doesn't matter who's the coach there. It's like he can't get on the field regularly. Gio Reyna, who's 19 and has a cat named Swag, I found out from this process, which is great. And then and Tim Weah, who you kind of expected, he played a lot in qualifying, and so I think that would, you know, they could make up a great three of your front four. The surprise here for me, John,
I forgot to add the strikers in, so I'll do that while you're talking.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I mean, those are your wingers, right? And then the surprise for me on the winger is Jordan Morris. When you think about a guy who has probably been struggling to make this team and to get to a World Cup for a long time, ever since he was a young prospect, it's like, good for him. You can see how much it meant to make it, but that meant Paul Areola is out, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, but, I think so. Sorry, I'm just typing here.
Yeah, and then you add the strikers in. You've got Jesus Ferreira, who has had a great season at FC Dallas, and you know, hasn't really turned that into international success quite yet, but there's a possibility. But you've got a little bit more of a veteran presence in Josh Sargent as your second striker, potentially going to compete to be the number one guy. And then finally, Haji Wright, who's on a tear, but he's on a tear in Turkey. Can that transfer to World Cup success? I think it's just, to me, John, is in all things in this U.S. team, you know who your nail down starters are. And then it's just been a matter of who does Greg identify as the young players who are going to be hungry, who are going to be difference makers off the bench.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to go back to the midfield real quick, I think that it, like, we have our solidified numbers, our out wide attackers. I like the Jordan Morris pick because the dude does perform when he goes in. He's not, you can't count on him, but you can count on him to work hard and to make things difficult for outside defenders. So I think we kind of need that guy off the bench, specifically if you're trying to lock in a game, very much like a Will Kidd type where he's going to play both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
But from a striker perspective, out is Ricardo Pepi and Jordan Pifo, who were two players that were helped get us here. But again, you know, maybe most recently starting to gain form again, but can they be counted on? I don't think Jesus Ferreira can be counted on. I think he plays a different style. Like, he's not a hold-up player when we kind of need that. Where Josh Sargent, even though he's slighter in size, I think he can do that. But you can see that with our group, we're playing against a Welsh team and a British team. And he's been playing in the Premier League and League Two for a number of years now. And he knows the type of defender he's going to be facing.
He knows these guys, yep.
Yeah, he kind of knows those guys. And then I look at Haji Wright. When have we had that, like, the big guy who's going to go in and just, like, wreak havoc on crosses and score with his head? Like, we haven't really had that since Josie, and even Josie wasn't that great at it. Daryl DK was another one. I think through injury, he was limited to even be in the conversation. But we don't have that guy. Haji Wright is that guy. I don't think Haji Wright's starting, but Haji Wright's coming in when defenders are tired and he's going to pound into him and knock him around and just use his body and maybe get those scrappy goals. And then Jesus Ferreira, I think he's more suited for if we need to catch a goal and we have two strikers, because he can kind of play a false nine a little bit to have someone kind of maybe, even if you use like a Tim Weah as a partner with him to try to chase a goal, we're using raw speed with a guy who's able to kind of be more controlled on the ball. I think we have some options, which makes it really exciting to me, is that we went with situational guys in form that are healthy and across the board here for Berhalter. And I'm really excited about what we're going to get. And I hope I'm not let down, but let's talk about, speaking of let down, how do we think we're going to do, Nate?
Yeah. Speaking of let down. Yeah. How do you think we're going to do, John? I mean, in a perfect world, what is the ideal group stage performance for this Team USA?
You already know I'm going to say this. I'll get to it in my actuality here. My perfect world, we win against Wales and England and we drop useless points to Iran that end up biting us in the ass when it comes to knockout round placement. So that's the perfect world, is that we beat the two guys and then we let some other guys get some World Cup experience. And we go with resting some of the legs for the last game, which really doesn't mean anything at that point, where it's really Wales and England fighting it out for the second spot. Actuality, you already know what I'm going to say here. Mm. Win one, lose one, draw one.
That's all you need to do.
Draw Wales in the first game, getting our legs under us, beat England and shut those guys up on Black Friday, which will now be known as the day we beat England in the World Cup from now until the end of time. And then we're going to lose to Iran because we're already through. So I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, there's a lot to get excited about, though, around the rest of the groups. And I want to talk to you about, maybe, are there any other teams besides Team USA that you want to watch? I'm personally really pumped to see what happens with this Canadian team, who all of a sudden discover that they've got a bunch of great talent out there, and they've done so well. Plus, it'd be exciting to see Dane St. Clair get the nod, since Kripo snapped his leg in the MLS final, right?
Yeah.
On the other side of the border, I'm also excited to see Team Mexico, El Tri. We'll see how that goes. A lot of old guys on that team, actually. Yeah. But there's I still am excited to see what Mexico can throw together, because I think their group is relatively weak, and they should be able to get out as top two.
Well, we're going to talk about that in a second.
Yeah, and the team, the team I'm most excited for, John, I think, is Argentina. I mean, I think this has to be Messi's year. The Argentinians are looking really, really good, and they've got a really nice path to the knockout stage and beyond.
For me, I call my teams column B. So column A is, everyone who you want to watch, you want to see Messi shine, you want to see some of the young bright stars of tomorrow on teams like Germany and the Netherlands and Spain. But that's all column A. Column B, USA, obviously. And then I have three teams: Denmark, Croatia, and Senegal. So Denmark, being a United fan, seeing Christian Eriksen come back from that horrific cardiac event that he had in the Euros to now being a starter and a key member for Man United, week in and week out, but then ultimately getting back to the guys in his country that literally helped save his life. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to like about that team. Plus they're very well set up and they have a lot of good talent.
And they're wearing the kits in protest.
Yeah. They're all social justice warriors. What else do you want?
Yep.
They got it all. Croatia, an aging Croatian side. I'm going to go a little deeper into them when we talk about their group. But Croatia has surprised people in not only the last World Cup, in the Euros. They're getting older, but they're not quite over the hill yet. So I think they can be a spoiler. And then my last pick, Senegal. Senegal is actually the highest rated underdog by points by all of the pundits. So I was looking at it today, and let me see if I can find it. I have it right here. That's the winner, Dark Horse. So they're at 26%. The next highest rated country to show out is Canada at 16%, which is one of yours. But then Uruguay, Portugal, and Denmark are the next three, all tied with the United States at 11%.
Wow.
And then you round it out with Serbia and Wales and Poland. So the Senegalese, like, there needs to be a time in the not too distant future from a World Cup perspective where an African country wins the World Cup. I don't think it's going to be Senegal this year, but I think they're going to give it a real good run and probably get the furthest that any African nation team has gotten in the World Cup. I think they're loaded with talent, and they have a really good coach that has been with them for a while. So those are my three to take a look at.
Yeah, and they're in Group A. Who else goes through from Group A? That's going to be Netherlands, Ecuador, Senegal, and Qatar.
It's a coin toss. Whoever wins the Senegal-Holland match take the top spot. But I think it's those two. And like I said, don't sleep on Senegal, as I mentioned. Depending upon their draw, they could really, really cause some problems for some of the column A teams, as I like to call them, in the knockout stages.
I agree. I think those are the two obvious picks out of Group A. Group B, we've already talked about a little bit, England, USA, Wales, and Iran. John, you think Iran might cause problems for Team USA, but you still haven't picked.
Yeah, I think they're going to go 2 losses, 1 win. And I think that although nothing, I would want nothing more than watching Wales knock out England. I think it's going to be the US and England going through.
I'm with you. Here. I think it's hard to bet against England in this instance, even though my heart goes out to Wales. I think that team is just so interesting and fun. And when you read about how Gareth Bale is like everyone's best friend on that team, like you really want that team to win. I'm an Aaron Ramsey guy too.
They told him he can't play golf. They told him he can't play golf while he's in Qatar, which is hilarious.
Yeah. You got to focus, man. Group C, John, this is the one I was talking about where this is a cakewalk for Argentina, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, and Poland. What do you think? Who goes through?
So I'm saying this purposefully. I think it's Lewandowski and Messi go through and not their teams. Like, they are the ones that carry their teams through. So I think those two guys are just too strong for the likes of Saudi Arabia, but specifically Mexico. I think Eltri, like, sorry, man, like, you guys are going to get knocked out. I know Mexico tends to perform and at least get to the knockout stages, which typically the U.S. does as well. And they most times they not have played each other in the knockout rounds. But I just look at this Mexico team. There's dissension in the ranks with the coach and the players, and there's too much off the field stuff happening where they don't have a cohesive group that has been together for too long. Yes, they're long in the tooth from an age perspective, but they haven't been playing together for a long period of time, like a Croatia has been doing, like I mentioned. I think there's gonna be problems for them, and you know, I think they're gonna be one of the CONCACAF teams that gets knocked out.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm with you as far as Argentina. Like, Messi is ready to put this team on his back, and he's got plenty of talent behind him to help out. I don't know, man. I love Robert Lewandowski, and I just don't think that he can do it on his own. A lot of questions with Poland. When you think about all the players that are in between Lewandowski and Chesney. So not sure. I'm up in the air about this one, and I'm going with my heart with Mexico. Argentina and Mexico advance. Group D. This one is interesting. I'm waiting to talk to you about this one too. Group D is France, Australia, Denmark, and Tunisia. Who do you think?
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with France and Denmark. Denmark is a perfect example of my column A team and my column B team. Mm-hmm. But I think they go through. But Tunisia is a decent looking squad, man. They're led by the guy who definitely makes the all-tournament name team in striker Wabi Kazari. I think he's like your Derek Ullman type player, where he's a little bit older than his bros around him, but he always finds a way to be involved and score goals. And in a tournament where it's obviously performance-based and who can get hot, I think they could potentially cause some fits for some of the bigger teams in their group. But I don't see them having the ability from a deep bench or other star power to move forward.
I think it's going to be Denmark here over Tunisia for sure. I think that they played together so well, and they're going to have a lot to play for with the return of Christian Eriksen. John, I'm really interested to watch this France team because you've got Mbappe, of course you've got Benzema, but they who they don't have, right, is Conte.
Conte, yep.
Yep, their midfield is absolutely decimated. I think they've got maybe four midfielders on the roster. Chouameni is one of them, and Camavinga.
But they're all really young. Good.
They're all good. They're all really young. So I'm really interested in how this French team is gonna show up. I think you're gonna have a lot of. I think it's gonna be very attack focused, and they're gonna want to outshoot their opponents. It's gonna be fun to watch. Group E, John: Spain, Costa Rica, Germany, Japan.
The group of death.
This is the group of death, right?
It absolutely is.
It's tough. This is a tough one to pick.
For me, it is a hard one. Japan are really good, man. They cause fits for more. They can cause fits for more traditional teams like the Spains and Germanys of the world. And if they're not careful, like Takayumi Minamino,
yeah.
Finally got out of the bench at Liverpool and is thriving in Monaco to the clip of scoring a goal every 100 minutes. So that's like a goal a game. And he's not the only one on that team. They press super high. They have some veteran leadership from a defensive midfield perspective that's like hard tackling. They're super organized, super technical. They're good. And much like what I was talking about with Senegal is that like, someday a team from the Asian group of nations is going to win the World Cup. And I think it's going to be Japan at some point. But in this one, I think that Die Mannschaft in Spain, it's their group to lose. Like,
yeah,
Spain are going to go through.
I'm going to tell you on this, I agree with you. And in this game, the one that feels the most boring to me is actually going to be that Germany-Spain game. Like Germany,
I think
super
so.
Organized, Spain, super ticky-tacky. Really, you know, a lot of passing, and it's just going to be like, God, somebody shoot the ball.
Yeah. Yep.
Next group, Group F, Belgium, Canada, Morocco, and Croatia. This could have an upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe so. So the way I looked at it was, I noted Croatia are my guys this year to look out for. They're again, an aging group. So that's a little bit of a concern. In this like kind of weird winter World Cup where it's in the middle of the season, but they've been there before and have some serious talent on that roster, both young and old. I mean, they're not just like a bunch of like 40-year-olds going out there. There's some, but there's some older guys on the roster, but they could really be a Final Four team. And then you look at Belgium, they has all the talent, but they're for sure like the what have you done for me lately squad that could easily disappoint in another major tournament again. With Canada and Morocco flipping the coin, kind of who wants to take the opportunity. I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say Croatia and Canada go through.
I love it. I'm also going to pick Canada in this one, John. I think Croatia's too old. I think it's going to be Belgium, Canada. KDB is so good. And he's going to have so much talent in front of him. I think it's just going to be a matter of can the old men of Jan Vertonghen and Alderweireld still defend?
I mean, as a veteran of breaking my metatarsal multiple times, like Kevin De Bruyne, he's won challenge and getting stepped on a corner kick away from not being in the World Cup again.
Dang. All right, John. Group G. This is going to be a cakewalk too for this team. Brazil, Serbia, Switzerland, Cameroon.
So Brazil is a no doubter, but Serbia is also no joke, man. They failed to qualify for the 2022 or 2020 Euros and have never gone past the knockout stage in a World Cup, but went undefeated in qualifying on the backs of players like Savic, Tadic, big striker, Mihalovic, that they can do it, man. Like I think they could be a serious contender to come out of this group and cause some problems. To win the World Cup, probably not, but you'll get to see how good they are against Brazil. And who is maybe some people's pencil in favorite. The Swiss are the Swiss. they're never going to be a team that you have to worry about. They're just kind of neutral. And Cameroon, I thought that Cameroon would have been a team to think about here, but they've had a rash of injuries to some key players. It tells me that it's going to be Brazil and Serbia going through.
I'm halfway there. Brazil for me and Switzerland for me. I don't know if you know this, John, but the Swiss team, you know, when you got Xhaka and Shaqiri and a couple of those other guys are actually Albanian and they hate the Serbs due to all the genocide.
So I think that's going to be
the one to watch again. I think 4 years ago, it was an emotional game to watch, and this year's gonna be no different. It's very, 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 very cool to me to see that kind of rivalry play out on the field. I'm also a big Granit Xhaka guy, so we're gonna go. I'm gonna go Brazil, Switzerland. Last group.
If you want to talk about an emotional game, we should just pay per view the Ukraine versus Russia, and instead of the World Cup, and see how many people watch that instead.
Last group, John, Group H. This group is like the least exciting for me. Portugal, Ghana, Uruguay, and South Korea.
Yeah, so Portugal and Uruguay for sure in this group. I could have said Ghana because they always get through, but not in this group this time around. And I think that South Korea is just too much of a one-trick pony that they're not going to be able to cause fits. But you might see Ghana maybe do something. I mean, what's Ronaldo going to do this World Cup? Like, does he have it? I think that the other Portuguese players around him are getting stronger than they traditionally have been since Ronaldo's been on the block, but they're still going to have to go through him because he's going to make them go through him. And does he have what it takes to elevate? Maybe he just needs a change of scenery for one more tournament. And I mean, he's done it before, or he's put a tournament on his back and just completely, you know, ran roughshod over a tournament. Maybe it happens again. I mean, he's still one of the best players ever. So yeah, he's older. His club situation's a little bit murky. Having some attitude problems, but when he plays for his country, he shows out.
Yeah, it's hard to go against Portugal and Uruguay in this group. I think I'm with you. South Korea, just they got Sun, and that's about it. And I think Ghana is just going to be the punching bag of this group, unfortunately.
Yeah, or they get through like they always do.
John, predictions on how this goes. Any who's going to win the World Cup? This is the big one for you.
For me, it's Argentina. I think they finally figured out with the recent Copa America victory that you need to put a group of enforcers around Messi while you still have him and let him do what he does best in what I like to call a protected environment. So don't make it so that people can mess with him and disrupt what he can do best. And they've done that. You mix that with the young talent that they have on their roster that wants to do everything they can to help get on the end of that Messi brilliance, to not disappoint him and likely their only chance to play with him in a World Cup. So I think there's a lot of emotions around there. And I think that their squad is built in a way that can pull that off. Plus you look at the fact that Messi he's rested due to his weird situation at PSG. And recently he's been in fantastic form. So it's like, he's rested. He's ready to go. They have every piece that you could possibly need for a tournament, plus the best player in the world, arguably ever. I think it's his time to hoist the World Cup and be like, peace, I'll see you in Miami playing for Beckham next year.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I think Argentina is the team to beat in this tournament, and I think that they've got some, you know, depending on the seeding and things like that, they're going to have some really favorable routes to at least to the final. But I'm excited to see it. I think my other teams to watch that could get far are Belgium. And then there's something about the Netherlands that I just think that every once in a while they'll pop up and go on a deep run in a World Cup. So those are my three.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
But again, who knows how the reseeding goes? Like, there, you might have a really, like in the quarters, you might have a really tough matchup that knocks out a team that in any other year could be a contender.
Yeah, we'll see. But check out all the action. Come on down to Utapils. At least watch the U.S. games with us, or just come down for the non-U.S. games and drink some beer and pretend you're working.
Yeah.
So that's a wrap on this week's show, folks. Thank you for listening. And thank you to our wonderful show sponsor, footballstadiumprints.com. If you're in the market for some supremely curated soccer-focused graphic design, they are the folks for you. You can get some sweet prints of city icons like Matt Elder and John Bizworm, or you don't know some field in the club shop. They got it all. Head on over to footballstadiumprints.com and fill up your cart today. Don't forget, use the code CROWS10, 10% off everything you purchase. And remember, all orders in the United States ship directly from here, so no pesky international shipping charges. 2023 memberships are now available. Like we talked about, the member meeting, you can be part of it. Jump on and get that early discounted price and get a voice that helps shape the club for next year. More votes are on the horizon, and members get early access to upcoming city merch. As a reminder, Minneapolis City is a 501c3, so consider a gift to the club that loves to give back. If you're interested in getting a hold of us, Paul did, and we had almost a whole show about Paul and all of his questions and how great they were.
The Paul Show.
Hit up the club on Twitter at MPLSCitySC. You can hit us up on the show at the People's Pitch or via email mcscpodcast@gmail.com. That is it. I am John. That was Nate. Soccer fever is going around. Hope you guys all catch it. We know we will, and you know what that means. More World Cup thoughts, more as the tourney gets underway, more player interviews, coaches, staff interviews, all that great stuff. So please stay tuned. Head on out to Utapil. See us in person. And as always, you got hope.
Yeah.